I'm Mark Dowd, and in this BBC World Service programme, I've travelled to Argentina to investigate Pope Francis's actions during the country's brutal military dictatorship.
Nuestro querido Francisco Jorge Bergoglio, el Papa, nuestro querido Francisco.
It's Palm Sunday in Buenos Aires, and here at the Church of San José de Flores, the Master Congregation are commemorating Jesus' triumphant ride into Jerusalem before his betrayal and crucifixion. But this year, feelings are riding higher than ever, because this place is home to Pope Francis, the first Jesuit pontiff, and also the first Latin American leader of the Roman Catholic Church. For the past few weeks, papal fever has been dominating radio phone-ins and the press here, but it's all very bittersweet because underlying the celebration lies a series of searching questions about Pope Francis's role here as a religious leader and whether or not he was complicit with the state terrorism of a military dictatorship back in the 1970s. Since his election a month ago, supporters of the new pope have been enjoying the fruits of positive media coverage, much of it based on eye-catching photo opportunities. But other stories have also emerged, which have put the Vatican on the back foot, such as his treatment of two fellow Jesuit priests back in the 1970s.
Bergoglio started a campaign saying they were terrorists and that they had strong links with subversive groups.
And in recent days, accusations that he may have been an unreliable witness in a court case which investigated atrocities under Argentina's military dictatorship.
I consider that it's clear that he lied under oath.
Those are very strong words.
Yes.
Well, I've just arrived in Bajo Flores. This is a sort of shanty town south of Buenos Aires where 45,000 people live, and I'm being given a brief tour by Father Gustavo Carrara, who's somebody who was instructed and educated by the new Pope in his work here in this mission with the poor. Hola, buenas tardes. ¿Te gustaría hacer una entrevista con la BBC? No. Pope Francis says he wants a poor church for the poor, and this is a place he knows well. He's come here many times, often incognito, just to chat to locals. But he's not just talk. His presence has made a material difference. The local priest showed me round the community centre. We're going into this room, and it's like a carpenter shop. There's about 10, 15 young people here learning to be carpenters, joiners, and people in this building learn to be artists and decorators and plumbers and mechanics. Until recently, this place was a hollow shell, but the cardinal pledged financial support. Within a short time, he'd sent them a cheque for $180,000. But Bajo Flores casts a long shadow over the new Latin American pope and has raised questions about his integrity, which I'm determined to get to the bottom of. Back in 1976, after Father Bergoglio had been made Jesuit provincial, the most senior position in the Society of Jesus in Argentina, the country underwent a coup that ushered in a brutal military dictatorship. Two of Father Bergoglio's fellow Jesuits, a Father Orlando Llorio and a Father Francisco Jalix, had been working here with some of the poorest people in the country. Bajo Flores was a well-known stronghold for militant left-wing opponents of the new regime. The priests were devotees of liberation theology. This was a movement which had exploded onto the scene in Latin America in the 1970s, and which, in some of its forms, asserted that a Marxist analysis of society was compatible with the gospel. Liberation theology was not exactly a way to endear yourself to the Jesuit superior, according to Luis Zamora, a human rights lawyer who has worked for years with the family of one of the priests.
What Jalix and Llorio said is that Bergoglio started a campaign against them right from the beginning. He didn't want them continuing their work in the slums. They said that not only did he denounce them, didn't protect them, but that Bergoglio started a campaign saying they were terrorists and that they had strong links with subversive groups. At some point, they both had their license to practice mass withdrawn. Other priests told them that they just heard bad reviews about them from their superiors, Bergoglio at the time. It was because he didn't want them working in the slums.
The two priests were seized by the military and brought to ESMA, the Navy Mechanical School, just north of downtown Buenos Aires. These days it's a quiet, eerie array of white colonnaded buildings, but in the 1970s it served as a detention and torture centre. Within days of their disappearance, their captors wasted no time in trying to eke out the truth about whether the Jesuit priests were political subversives or not. Luis Zamora again.
During the first days at ESMA, they were tortured. At some point, Yorio, who was the biggest suspect for the Navy, got an injection so he would lose consciousness and may talk about his involvement with terrorism. But when he lost consciousness, he started talking about Jesus and God, because he was a great theologian, actually. One of the torturers said, "This man is not guilty at all, because he's talking about God, not terrorism and politics."
An estimated 30,000 people disappeared in the 7 years of military rule. Many were handcuffed and thrown alive out of planes into the huge estuary of the Rio Plata. On the other side of the riverbank, neighbouring Uruguay lodged formal complaints over the bodies that sullied their shores. The two priests were spared this fate, and after 6 months they were released. The Jesuit order helped them flee the country, but this was far from the end of the tale. 3 years later, Father Jalix, now living in exile in Germany, wanted to get his passport renewed, but feared arrest if he returned. His superior, Father Bergoglio, offered to go to the ministry to get his papers approved. Horacio Verbitsky, once a member of a militant left-wing group that opposed the military regime, is now a journalist and human rights activist. He interviewed Father Jalix at length in the years after his release. Verbitsky showed me a document he found in the archives of the Foreign Ministry, which he says is a log of the conversation between Father Bergoglio and the official handling the passport application.
It's a note signed by the officer that received the request of Father Bergoglio concerning Father Jalix, say that he had a disturbing activity, suspicious of contact with guerrillas.
It says here, I'm looking at the letter with you, it says suspected of contact with guerrillas.
Yes.
In this document, as we look at it, who has brought these words about?
Father Bergoglio. The document ends with a note from the officer that says that this information was provided to him by Father Bergoglio and has asked specially not to accept the same thing that he was on the table asking for.
In other words, Horacio Verbitsky says it appeared as though Father Bergoglio wanted the passport renewed, but in fact this was never his intention. We have a copy of the document, and indeed the words suspected of contact with guerrillas do appear on it. But in an interview in a recent biography, the Pope countered this, insisting it is an incomplete account. What he actually said at the time was, "They were suspected of contact with guerrillas, even though I never thought they were." The latter words, he said, were never recorded. Horacio Verbitsky remains unconvinced.
I believe that this document shows the double standard of Father Bergoglio. Face to face, Bergoglio told them that he were helping them, backing him, supporting them, but that then they knew that he was telling false stories about them to other bishops. He had two faces. Their testimonies accusing him and their testimonies relieving him of guilt.
Many aspects of this whole story are contested by Pope Francis. In the same interview for the biography, he said there's no clear evidence he ever called the two priests subversives. And not only that, he claimed he specifically intervened in behind-the-scenes talks with the military to aid their release. So what became of the two Jesuits? Father Yorio died in the year 2000, and Father Jalix, now 85, lives in a secluded monastery in Germany. Within 2 days of Pope Francis's election, he issued a statement saying he was reconciled with past events. To some, the phrase appeared ambiguous. A week later, a further statement. Pope Francis, he said, did not denounce me to the Argentinian junta. The Vatican lost no opportunity to finger its opponents. They dismissed Horacio Verbitsky and his like as left-wing anti-clerical forces and accused them of a defamatory smear campaign. I put this to Verbitsky.
This is the same accusation that Father Bergoglio directed against Yorio and Jalix in 1976. He accused Jalix and Yorio of being Marxists, terrorists, subversives. They accused me of being left-wing, anti-clerical. It's the same attitude.
So what sense can we make of this fog of accusation and counter-accusation?
I think the fatal flaw in all foreign reporting on this issue is that it tries to place the issue in the context of past Argentine politics, that is, the politics of the 70s.
Religious affairs specialist Ivan Petrella works for the respected Fundación Pensar, a centre-right think tank.
You need to place this in the context of current Argentine politics, that is, what is happening today in Argentina, not in the past. Let me explain. Bergoglio, here in Buenos Aires, preached against corruption, especially corruption at the highest level of government. Now, he preached against corruption in a government that is highly corrupt. He preached against poverty and inequality in a country that is highly unequal. So that message is obviously very threatening. He requested in 14 different occasions meetings with President Cristina Fernández de Kirchner. In all 14 occasions, those meetings were rejected. So, I mean, that gives you a sense that there's no love lost between him and the current government.
In Argentina, one can't get away from the deafening sound of grinding axes. Getting to the bottom of contentious issues presents huge challenges in a country that is heavily polarized politically. The right accused the left of using the Yorio and Jalix story to land a blow against the entrenched power of the church. Despite its status as a democracy, the left bemoaned the lack of transparency and openness in modern Argentina, which means that access to information that may be in the public domain in other countries often remains elusive. In spite of all this, the vexed questions around the church's alleged complicity with military dictators is an issue that simply refuses to go away. There's now a further story involving Pope Francis that raises questions about his track record as head of the church in Argentina. And it centres on perhaps one of the most grisly and shocking aspects of the seven-year so-called dirty war. Hundreds of pregnant women, purported left-wing activists, were seized, and after they gave birth, they were swiftly murdered. Their babies were handed on to families friendly with the military junta. Midwives have testified that at least one military chaplain was directly involved in the transfer of children. To this day, some relatives are still searching for the infants who were stolen from their mother's breasts. This is the story of one of the so-called niños desaparecidos.
The sunshine has given way to driving rain and leaden skies. I'm on my way to La Plata. It's about an hour's drive outside of Buenos Aires to meet a woman called Estela de la Cuadra with a particularly spine-chilling story to tell about what happened to her family during the period of the dictatorship.
In February 1977, a group of people kidnapped my sister Elena and her husband Hector. She was 5 months pregnant.
In July 1977, the family got word that Elena had given birth to a baby girl, Anna. But mother and daughter were soon to be abruptly separated.
She was taken away from her mother's arms and given to someone else. That moment we kept searching for her. Part of the La Quadra family was very close to the Catholic Church, so my parents got a meeting with Cardinal Bergoglio, and my father told him the whole story, asking him to help our family to find Anna.
The then Father Bergoglio offered to help the Della Quadra family by introducing them to a local bishop who might work behind the scenes for Elena's release. So why does this story raise questions about the new pope? In 2010, the by-now Cardinal Bergoglio was called to a state tribunal and asked to give evidence about the church's relationship with the military dictatorship. Initially, he declined to appear, citing special privileges in his capacity as leader of the church, but eventually he gave evidence which lasted 4 hours in total. He was specifically asked when he first knew that children were being stolen from their mothers and passed on to families approved of by the military junta. This recording is not officially in the public domain, but has been leaked to the press. Recently, he says, about 10 years ago, or maybe around the time of the military junta trial, in other words, 1985. Yet in my meeting with Estella, she shows me a letter from the autumn of 1977. We've got the letter here in front of us. I can see at the top in the left-hand corner, it just says from the provincial of the Society of Jesus. It's dated San Miguel, that's the base, the Jesuit base, on the 28th of October 1977, and the signature at the bottom is very clearly from Jorge Mario Bergoglio. And so what does the letter say?
Simplemente nombra a mi padre con su nombre completo.
Dear Monseñor Pichi, I am going to the trouble of introducing Mr. Roberto Luis de la Cuadra, with whom I had a conversation at the special request of Father Arrupe. He will explain to you what it is about, and I would thank you for all you are able to do. Don't forget me in your prayers. Jorge Mario Bergoglio.
The text of this letter says nothing about the specifics of Elena's case and her missing child. However, there was a further court hearing, this time in 2011, which specifically examined the issue of stolen children. This time, the present pope was allowed to provide written evidence. I have acquired this testimony, and in it he's asked specifically about the Della Quadra case. We've voiced his words.
I knew that Señor de la Quadra had a daughter who had been abducted. I don't recall if he told me she was pregnant.
He was further asked if he was aware if the Catholic Church had, during the time of the junta, or indeed currently had, any special committee looking into the cases of the missing children. He responded,
I don't know if the hierarchy set up such a committee, but it's possible a group of laypeople or a religious community did so, or is currently carrying this out. I don't know.
Estella remains unconvinced by the Cardinal's assertion that he knew nothing about missing children, such as her niece, Anna.
She's just taken out this amazing archive of newspaper articles from France and from Brazil, from other countries, all dating from 1979, so in fact, right in the middle of the dictatorship.
Donde? En Francia.
What strikes me here, we've got a French newspaper headline from Thursday, the 20th of September, 1979. It talks about a list of 45 children and 57 pregnant women, which is published. What Estella is saying is that it's inconceivable that this wouldn't have come to his knowledge.
TV cameras from the time recorded the distraught women in the Buenos Aires main square. This woman tells the reporter her daughter was 5 months pregnant when they took her away. If Father Bergoglio had opted for the life of a recluse, one might understand how all this media coverage might have passed him by. But he belonged to the Jesuits, an order renowned for their hands-on engagement with the world. Investigative journalist Horacio Verbitsky says there's only one conclusion possible.
I consider that it's clear that he lied under oath.
Those are very strong words.
Yes.
Why do you say he lied?
Because he said that he never knew of the kidnapping of babies of the disappeared up to the ending of the dictatorship. The facts are that Bergoglio saying that didn't know, and family de la cuadra, saying that he knew, and he sent them to talk with another bishop, and that the other bishop researched the case and told them that their baby was given to a military family. These are the hard facts.
But when all is said and done, the hard evidence is inconclusive. The unanswered question remains, how is it that the then Cardinal Bergoglio says he knew nothing when there was so much material in the public domain? We wanted to ask some questions to the Pope's press spokesman, fellow Jesuit Father Federico Lombardi. He gave us a simple statement.
As you know, the case of the Della Quadra family has been raised many times, and Cardinal Bergoglio has given his answers. I have nothing to add.
Estella Della Quadra, meanwhile, is still waiting.
I think Anna deserves to know that her father was dropped from an airplane to the river and that we found the body. It's important to notice Bergoglio didn't help at all to open the church archives. We need to know the truth, and the truth will only come up if the archives are opened.
So how much do these unwelcome stories from the past tarnish the image of the new papacy of Pope Francis? Ivan Petrella of the think tank Fundación Pensar.
The Argentine Catholic Church, in terms of its hierarchy, was more complicit with the dictatorship than in other churches in the region. At least that seems to be the consensus story that has emerged. At the same time, it is also true that there were many priests, and every indication is Bergoglio was one of them, who worked behind the scenes to try to help as many people as they could. I mean, the Argentine Catholic Church did not have, at the time, somebody with the moral stature of, say, for example, an Archbishop Romero.
Oscar Romero was
Archbishop of El Salvador, Archbishop of San Salvador, at a time when El Salvador was in the midst, really, of a civil war. And he stood up against that civil war, and especially against the military, who at the time was killing its own citizens. And in a very famous sermon, he spoke out against this. One or two days later, he's assassinated while saying Mass. So, you know, we did not have that in Argentina. And in fact, you didn't have that outside of El Salvador. At the same time, you know, Romero got himself killed. And to openly play a Romero role would have, I think, most certainly been a death sentence.
You mentioned Bergoglio there. In simple terms, on a score of 0 to 10, where 0 is that he's completely complicit and did nothing, and 10 is this man intervenes for everybody, where does he figure on that spectrum for you?
750. You know, if a 10 is a Romero,
yeah.
You know, Bergoglio was not a Romero. And then again, you know, very few people were throughout the region.
Last year, Cardinal Bergoglio did issue a formal statement on behalf of the Argentine Church, asking for the forgiveness of everyone it had failed or hadn't supported. The bishops, however, denied claims that the Church was complicit in any human rights violations. But what of the current Pope's own personal role? Supporters say he was far from inactive during this period. He is said to have provided shelter for two priests at the Jesuit study house in Buenos Aires, and there's even his own tale that he gave his identity papers to a man fleeing the country to Uruguay, though no one has come forward so far to confirm the veracity of this story. Ernesto Giobando is a senior Jesuit in Buenos Aires, now responsible for making the world more aware of the new Pope's preaching and theology.
Yo creo que de la Iglesia en algunos hechos ha quedado ya suficientemente claro.
It's clear now that Father Bergoglio did not collaborate with the dictatorship. He helped many people during those years. From my perspective, I have to say that those were very difficult years even for the Church. There were also strong statements by the Church against dictatorship. Of course, there was silence too. I think Father Bergoglio was a real supporter of democracy and wanted dictatorship to be over in Argentina.
Back in the shanty town of Bajo Flores, where those two Jesuit priests were abducted, the community priest, Father Carrera, acknowledges that under military rule, the then Father Bergoglio did not always find it easy dealing with the realities of political power.
Ahora creo que se ha aclarado bastante.
In basic terms, Father Gustavo is saying it's a real dilemma for anybody in the church facing this kind of dictatorship about what tactics to employ. And of course, with the wisdom of hindsight, it's always easy to say you can do certain things and not other things. But there's no doubt that he helped people. There's no doubt that his record is a good one. And in the general sense of things, he doesn't think he has anything to apologize for about the way he behaved during this period. Three days after he was elected, Pope Francis met with journalists from all over the world. In his address, he said, "Always try to better understand the true nature of the Church, and even its journey in the world, with its virtues and with its sins." Virtues and sins. Both can define the image of the Church. Many have enthusiastically embraced the first Latin American Pope. He brings to the chair of St. Peter values shaped by his own testing experiences of dealing with one of the most brutal regimes in history. The world waits to see how his papacy will evolve, but perhaps it can never truly come into its own until the ghosts of the past have been put to rest. I'm Mark Dowd, and the producer of The Truth About Pope Francis was Charlotte Pritchard.